Welcome to On Jordan, a podcast on the latest developments in Jordanian politics, featuring interviews with experts from across the Hashemite Kingdom. My name is Aaron Magid, a former Amman-based journalist, now in Washington. In a 2010 speech at a Women of the World Summit in New York, Queen Rania discussed the best ways to advocate for gender equality, explaining,
"Because today we have a toolbox of new technologies and social media innovations altering the media landscape. Phones and Facebook, blogs and widgets, Twitter and texting, we can reach every corner of the world, from African villages to the US Congress, and we can rally the masses around causes we care about."
12 years later, Queen Rania remains an avid user of social media, with 17 million followers on Facebook and 10 million on Twitter. But it's not just the royal family that understands the importance of Facebook or Clubhouse. Millions of Jordanians use social media apps every single day, whether to communicate with loved ones, read the news, or organize politically. So does Jordan's government restrict social media access? And have over 100,000 fake social media accounts been set up across the region to target the Hashemite Kingdom, as Jordan's prime minister said in January? For a deep dive into the questions surrounding social media usage in Jordan, it's great to welcome Ashraf Zaytoun to the podcast. Ashraf serves as former head of public policy for the Middle East and North Africa at Facebook. He was also the first director of public policy for the Middle East, Turkey, and Africa at Netflix. Prior to Ashraf's time in the private sector, he worked in Jordan's foreign ministry as an officer responsible for the Middle East Peace Process Desk and was assistant director of the government's performance directorate in Jordan's prime minister's office. Thank you for joining us, Ashraf.
Hi, Aaron. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So which social media apps are most popular in Jordan?
Social media in Jordan is extremely popular. I think for a lot of people in Jordan, the platforms are nearly the sole outlets for them to engage in a public discourse. In a lot of cases, they're often the only source of information when it comes to pivotal events in which the government decides to delay their comments or not to even have any comments whatsoever. An example was the terrorist incident in Al-Karak, where literally all Jordanians in Jordan around the world were glued to their phones, trying to dig as much information about an event that really touched a special place for a lot of Jordanians. But when we try to frame our discussions around social media penetration and usage in Jordan, there are some key data metrics we need to have in mind. We're around 78% population are on mobile, so around 8 million mobile connections. There's around 6.9 million internet users, which also stands around 67% of population. Some data reports have higher estimates where they say it's around 8.7 million, which would stand around 85% population. On social media usage, we have around 6.85 million Jordanians who are active on social media. So that's around 66.6% population. When we try to grill into what are the preferred platform for the users, Facebook remains the most important and the biggest. There's around 5.25 million Jordanians on Facebook. It still remains the largest platform, but it has been recording some minor drop over the last couple of years. So last year, it dropped around 3% when it comes to usage and numbers in Jordan, but still the biggest. And then when we're looking at the younger population, Instagram and Snap are growing like fire. So on Instagram, we have around the past 2 years. And then when we look at it from a different and influential opinion makers, there are two platforms that are extremely important, despite the reduced numbers of users. So Twitter, we have around 740,000 users in Jordan, which is a very low number compared to Facebook or Instagram, Snap. But it remains the most influential when it comes to public discourse, when it comes to discussion, political activism. And then over the last 2 years, a new app that has grown in importance has been the audio app Clubhouse, which gained significant growth following its launch. I would have to say that was due to the timing of the launch with certain political developments that took place in Jordan. And it became literally the preferred forum for activism, for political debate. And all of that was despite government attempts to block the access to the service in the country. And the last point of the data is the number of fiber optic subscriptions have also been increasing. So I think social media currently and internet penetration is growing significantly in Jordan. It has become extremely instrumental, significant for the lives of a lot of Jordanians.
Now, this is a personal pet peeve of mine. Why can't WhatsApp calls be made to Jordan, even as WhatsApp calls can be made to so many countries worldwide?
I wish I got a dollar for each time I got asked this question. So there is a straightforward answer and there is not a straightforward answer. So the straightforward answer is is a protectionist policy by governments, and not the only Jordanian government, or other governments in the region. A lot of governments protect calls over voice over IP platforms used for voice and video internet calls on the pretext that they're protecting the economic interest of national telecommunication companies. And in some cases, they would even go the extra step and they would say that these platforms like WhatsApp, Telegram, Signal, in order for them to operate within a specific jurisdiction, they need to comply with local regulation around lawful intercept, which in most cases, none of these apps is willing to comply. Some would argue that the benefit to the entire economy by opening up these calls greatly outweighs the benefit to a single sector or certain companies. But then we have to remember that these companies, the telco companies, pay significant taxation to governments, specifically in Jordan. And I believe the mobile operators are literally the highest tax corporations in Jordan. But in a lot of cases, most of that taxation is not paid by the company, is literally transferred and paid by the subscribers. I think they take the lame excuse in saying that the companies would not be able to invest and develop the quality of the network or expand their range and network due to decline in profits, due to these WhatsApp calls and all of these things. I think all of these are very lame excuses. And I think these are very outdated protectionist policies that are adopted by the government in Jordan.
Have any of the social media platforms established large regional offices in Amman?
None so far. And I think the reason behind that is a number of what I believe are convincing reasons. So one, primarily talking about taxation, you're talking about complicated regulatory framework, you're talking about the small size of the economy and the user base. And lastly, you're talking about difficulty of setting up a business in Jordan. So it boils down to such a decision does not make economic sense for the platforms. The government, I believe, on numerous attempts have tried to attract some of the leading platforms to establish their presence in Jordan, but to no success, and for the reasons that we mentioned beforehand.
Jordan's prime minister said in January of this year that 120,000 fake social media accounts were set up in the Middle East to target Jordan. Is this accurate?
Adam, I've been following this for quite some time now. Over the past couple of years, government officials in Jordan have come out with what I believe are outlandish claims. The claims range around that the kingdom has been directly attacked by tens of thousands of fake accounts on social media, primarily Twitter and TikTok. And they've come with such, I think, outlandish estimates ranging from 10,000 to 70,000 to tens of thousands and all the way up 120,000 fake accounts. And the claim that they've been continuously repeating is these accounts are targeting the kingdom and civic peace in the kingdom while undermining the government achievement. Let me give you a sequence of these statements for you and the listeners to clearly identify the discrepancy. April 13, 2021, Dastur newspaper, official spokesperson, without naming him, mentioned that the fake accounts exceed 54,000, and all of them are aimed at sowing discord and exploiting situation circumstances in a destructive manner. April 21st, 2021, Minister of State, former Minister of State for Media Affairs, Sakhar Duddin, he mentioned 120,000 fake accounts on Twitter, on social media. And the premise there is forming a fake public opinion after the issue of the sedition. And he described it as a black campaign against the country. October 21st, 2021, the current Minister of State for Media Affairs, Faisal Lishboul, he went on and said that the share of content of those accounts sometimes reaches 20% of the content that's shared around Jordan. And he described them as accounts targeting Jordan in various ways and supported by countries and organizations in the region. Jan 11, 2022, Prime Minister Khassoune, he mentioned 120,000 fake accounts from countries in the region that target Jordan. January 25th, 2022, Prime Minister Bishr al-Khassoune, 10,000 fake accounts. So if I look at all these official statements, what I'm seeing is it's an obvious trend. I'm seeing significant discrepancy between the different numbers that are being shared out. In my opinion and from my experience, I believe this is an attempt by the government to manufacture an external enemy. there has been no transparency whatsoever in coming out with details or explanation about how they come up with these numbers. And based on the opinion of a number of experts that I consulted with them and my expertise, I honestly believe that these statements are overblown, and so far they're unsubstantiated.
Freedom House reports that Jordan has restricted internet access during sensitive events. Does the Jordanian government also restrict social media access?
Over the past couple of years, unfortunately, we've detected a trend of the government intervening more and more into this sphere. For me, I think it's an indication of their worry about the public opinion and how the social media is for them is an uncontrolled space compared to the current media in the country. Over the last couple of years, restricting and blocking access to the internet, especially social media platforms, have become the norm, especially during politically sensitive events. In July and August 2020, when we had the protest for the closure of the teacher syndicate, the government, while they claim they don't block access, they use certain tactics that us who are in the industry are familiar with, where they throttle the bandwidth. So Facebook Live is the most important tool that activists, protesters use to stream the current events. They use it as a way to broadcast their statements and at the same time to try to mobilize support for what they're doing. In a lot of cases, and even like most recently, the minister have come out and they've said, we haven't blocked it. The Telecom Regulatory Commission came out and said they haven't blocked it, which I found it quite surprising. Then who took that decision? Some people will have other scenarios to think about it. But again, we're all familiar that governments around the world use different tactics. It's literally you throttle the bandwidth. Facebook Live have specific IP address, specific bandwidth dedicated for that service. The minute you throttle it, you reduce the capacity to carry more data and you reduce the experience. So you're literally discouraging people from either using Facebook Live or watching Facebook Live videos. March 2021, the incident with the deaths of COVID-19 patients in Al Salt Hospital. Authorities again disrupted access to Facebook Live with the demonstrations. March 2021, social media Clubhouse application Clubhouse was shut down because it was used by significant, I wouldn't say significant sizable proportion population, but I think a significantly influential proportion of the population that were using it to literally engage in a public debate about the developments that are happening in the country. And this is not to mention that since 2015, the government have come into, I would say, the normal habit of ordering the ISPs to block access to messaging apps, WhatsApp, Signal, on the days that secondary school students sit for the TOJIH exams, which again disrupts a lot of business sectors. It affects them. And again, it's a very weak approach to trying to address this challenge. They should worry about the leakage of the questions for TOJIH instead of trying to blocking these apps. The main point that a lot of people in the industry talk about, and especially the activists in civil society, is there has been a lack of transparency in blocking procedures. We don't know anything. The minister claims that they have nothing to do with it. The telco regulatory authority claims that they've had nothing to do with it. So that means that either the telcos themselves take the decision. Telcos are private sector operators. I don't think they would take that decision without getting instruction from somewhere else. And for me, it's an indication that other authorities are interfering in this matter, or the government entities who are responsible for this are not telling us the truth. So again, all of these affect the competitiveness and affect how the telco, the social media platforms look at the Jordanian economy, because they're not going to operate in an economy. Facebook is not going to open an office in Jordan when Facebook Live continues to be throttled or blocked by the government.
How closely do Jordanian government officials monitor activist social media posts?
Over the last couple of years, we've also witnessed a growing trend whereby we see interventions by government entity in this sphere. That wasn't the case. I think even post-Arab Spring, the early years of the Arab Spring, there wasn't this intervention in this space. But I think over the last couple of years, especially with the development of new technology and everything, we started seeing significant intervention either due to legislation or either due to surveillance. So under cybercrime legislation, internet users can face fines or prison terms up to 3 months if they're convicted of defamation for online comment. Several activists and protesters in 2020, 2021, were charged with offenses related to social media posts in which they criticized the government. At the same time, we've also started witnessing a growing number of cyber attacks against politicians, online accounts, and news sites. And that has been reported in multiple reports, and specifically in the Freedom of the Net report by Freedom House. And the most recent case is the one where we started seeing several Jordanian activist accounts hacked by the infamous NSO Pegasus spyware. And the reports by the human rights organization Frontline Defenders have clearly indicated that they believe that the evidence, the digital evidence that they managed to identify, points to Jordanian government entities as perpetrators of this surveillance. This is something we're not used to in Jordan. We've never seen before. But I mean, unfortunately, this is a trend that we're seeing it growing more and more every year. We've literally had no response from the government. We've seen certain reports saying coming out that indicate the state's narrative, which where the government is trying to redirect the blame for the Pegasus hacks away from itself and maybe pointing it to other organizations globally, or in certain cases trying to point the finger at Israel. But honestly, if we look at it, while it's near impossible for researchers to say with 100% certainty who's behind the hacks, the primary evidence is pointing towards certain entities within the Jordan government. We haven't seen any investigation whatsoever in that. And Axios, for us, in a number of reports, have confirmed that the Jordanian government was in talks with NSO to acquire such advanced surveillance software.
Pivoting now to your work at Netflix, has the Jordanian government tried to take down shows from Netflix?
Netflix is a different because Jordan has been making significant strides in trying to position Jordan, historical locations, amazing scenery in Wadi Rum and other places, as a great location for productions from around the world. These foreign studios coming and shooting films invest significantly in the country. They give a significant foreign currency injection to the economy, and they create significant jobs. With Netflix, we've had two cases. One was prior to my term with Netflix. We had the first Arabic original coming out of the Middle East, and the first Arabic original to come out of Jordan was Jinn. There was a significant public outcry against it for what they believed as content that defies the family values or the traditional values of Jordanian family. Again, I don't subscribe to that. I believe there was a big outcry from society. The funny thing is it created such a big bubble, while at that time, Netflix had less than 15,000 subscribers in Jordan. So again, that shows you in a lot of cases, a lot of the people who are commenting on this didn't even bother to see the show. They based their arguments on what people say or talk about in social media. I don't believe Netflix received any formal request from the government to block that, which Netflix most cases would not comply with. The second case was the international series feature series, The Messiah, which parts of it around, I think more than half of it was shot in Jordan. There wasn't a public outcry as much as that, but then the Royal Film Commission tried to distance themselves from some of the content that they believe was controversial. And again, at that case, Netflix didn't receive any request whatsoever for the removal of that content from the platform. And this is not to mention that currently a platform like Netflix doesn't fall under jurisdiction of Jordanian legislation.
And what specifically made these two Netflix shows so controversial in Jordan?
So the first one, Jinn, there were some curse words, there were some kisses between what they felt with teenagers. And these were the only things that were there. There was zero nudity, there was zero attack on religious figures, which are usually in the bigger context in the region. The two things that will trigger significant uproar are attacks on religious figures, attacks on political figures, head of state, and third one is nudity. And in that case, none of these things were even in the show. But again, we're talking about different, I would describe as double standards, because people presume that this show is representative of Jordan, while at the end of the day, this is a young adult show that Netflix produced for a global audience. It just happens that they were in Jordan, they were speaking Arabic. So this is where, so you have this gap in expectations and anticipation between what the people watch and what they expect. And at the end of the day, my argument and how I see it when I talk to people, you're talking about 15,000 subscribers in Jordan. So you cannot tell me that this uproar was caused by 15,000 subscribers who watched in Jordan. It became the most pressing public discourse or public debate issue in Jordan for a couple of weeks till something else came and took its place. But again, I believe this is a society that's in transition. There is significant development, societal development. You have debates between liberal values and traditional values. And again, I think it's a very healthy thing, but I always advise people, don't base your assumption or don't base your opinion on something that you haven't watched. And that was the case for most people. Even we have members of parliament who came out and said it. Even you had the head of the actors syndicate who was against it. And when they asked him, he said, I didn't watch it. So how can you be against something? How can you be against a book where you haven't read it or against a show where you haven't watched? You might be basing your opinion on factually wrong information.
Last question, is there anything else about social media apps in Jordan that you haven't mentioned that you think is important?
The biggest failure, I would say, the government has failed so far in trying to engage with Jordanians on social media. They've had some very coy attempts in trying to engage, but again, at the end of the day, they've been very traditional. Ex-minister opens this center in the village of Qatar. These are things are not honestly important for a big segment of society. Governments have to adopt a new norms and a new ways of trying to engage with their citizens in a very open debate around the key issues that matters to them. And the government has been extremely, they're not there as easy as possible. What they come up is statements. They're literally adopting the old television mentality whereby a figure goes in front of a camera. They don't realize that social media we live in, and especially in a society in Jordan that has been witnessing a lot of burdens, significant impact on their lives, you need to engage in an open debate with them. So you need to talk to them and you need to listen to them. I don't think the government is doing that. And I think that's the biggest failure that they've have done so far. And for me, I'm afraid this could be a big problem in the years to come if they don't fail to address it, because we currently, and it's very evident for someone like me who works in that field, there is a huge gap between the government statements, government positions, and the public discourse by Jordanians on social media. I don't see that gap being bridged anytime soon.
Thank you very much, Ashraf. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, Aaron.
That was former Facebook head of Middle East public policy, Ashraf Zaytoon. Here's what else you should know this week. On May 8th, Human Rights Watch urged Jordan to end death imprisonment before the current moratorium expires in June. According to Jordan's Justice Ministry, at least 148,000 people are wanted to serve prison terms for unpaid debts. The New York-based Human Rights Watch explained that Jordan is one of the few countries worldwide that still jails citizens for debt. In other news, many Jordanians were outraged this weekend after vandals defaced pillars in the northern Jordanian city of Jerash. According to Roya TV, Jerash is the second most visited tourist destination in Jordan, after Petra, with the well-preserved Roman ruins attracting numerous visitors. Finally, on May 4th, the state-owned Petra News reported that Jordan jumped 9 slots in Reporters Without Borders' annual ranking from 129th out of 180 to 120th. Petra News quoted the head of Jordan's journalism syndicate saying that the new rankings represented an important step, highlighting the progress in press freedoms across the Hashemite Kingdom. Reporters Without Borders noted in its 2022 report that journalists in Jordan are often subject to close surveillance by the intelligence agencies and are frequently prosecuted and even convicted under an extremely vaguely worded terrorism law. Before I go, please subscribe to the podcast on Spotify, Apple, or Google Podcasts to be notified of new episodes. And feel free to listen to previous week's episodes on King Abdullah's leaked Swiss bank accounts with Farah Marapa and Jordan's economic developments with former royal court chief Joette Anani. Finally, if you're listening to the podcast, especially if you live in Jordan and think you'd be a great guest, please reach out to me on Twitter at Aaron Magid or via email aaron.magid1@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.